He is a professor from the Department of Biology at Western University. Jeremy McNeil, welcome to the program. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Thank you for having me on, Tom.
No problem. So this was interesting that the International Union for Conservation of Nature has added the migratory monarch butterfly as an endangered species. I guess endangered a few levels from extinct, but still a critical, right, designation, I guess, to raise alarm bells. Are you surprised at this designation?
Not really, no. I mean, the overwintering populations in Mexico have been going up, and they go up and down each year. No, like this year could be higher than next year, et cetera. But the overall trend in the last 2 decades has been a decline in the overall populations there. And, of course, they will influence the populations moving north into the summer range.
So what do you think is the biggest factor here? Because you talked about the overwintering, and if the population's in decline there, we can expect to see an overall decline. Is that the driving factor, or are there things elsewhere that are happening to precipitate this?
It's an overall thing. They only use milkweed to lay their eggs on and the larvae, so the availability of the larval host plant is important. Climate change will have a factor, the destruction of habitat, you know, changes in agriculture. But I think right now the really decline that we're seeing here in the province this year is probably related to climate change, which, of course, all of them will interact. And the relative importance of each one may change from year to year. But like I said, I think this year it's climate change with this extremely hot weather.
Is it wrong to think that the monarch butterfly, it's a beautiful, gorgeous species. It's one of the prettiest insects we know. But is it like a bellwether for all other insects? Like some of the ones that I know, Professor McNeil, you may think they're all beautiful. Not all of us do, but they have a role. They have a role in what they do, either as, and I've talked to people about, the role of bees as pollinators, of course, and there's a crisis in the bee industry right now. Are we seeing other less glamorous species also face declines like the monarch butterfly?
Well, there are some. I mean, clearly there have been these papers calling the insectageddon, where certain insects are going down, but other ones go up, because each one has a preference for temperature, you know, humidity, and so on and so forth. So conditions may change that are not beneficial for species A, but may be beneficial for species B. And as a result, you'll see a decline in one, but an increase in the other. I think one of the things we have to realize is these very, very hot temperatures will have a negative effect on the insect in one way, because, you know, it gets so hot and it's detrimental. It can kill them, or even if they survive, may have a negative effect on their ability to reproduce. But there's the indirect effect as well. The adults really need to feed on nectar. That's their energy source. But when it gets really hot, the plants have nectar, but the water evaporates off, so it becomes really thick and viscous. And it's a bit like me saying, comparing you drinking a glass of water with the same straw, but then I change it for really cold maple syrup, and you will find it a heck of a lot more difficult to suck up the maple syrup. And this is what's happening for them. So there may be less food around. And, of course, they need the food. The plants are like gas stations. So when they're migrating north, when they're migrating south, they have to have the flowers. And in weather like this, even if they survive the direct negative effects of temperature, this availability, and we think this is one of the factors that may become more and more important as climate change goes on.
So what can be done then? I mean, there have been campaigns to, you know, make your backyard or your garden, pollinator friendly or butterfly friendly, especially for monarchs, planting milkweed, or does more than just a little citizen action need to take place here?
Well, I mean, the citizen action is always good. I mean, we've heard a lot about milkweed being, the absence of milkweed. You know, 20 years ago or more, it used to be considered an agricultural weed, and you had to destroy it. Now that is not the case. And I mean, I sampled over 5,000 plants about 3 weeks ago and found less than 100 individual monarchs. So it's not that this year, at least, which is the problem. But I think the other thing that we're finding since I've been here in London, they're moving a bit further north because maybe too hot here. But of course, if you go further north, you've got more distance to travel back to Mexico. That's one thing. But the other thing, the thing that turns them off from staying but to start the onset of migration is a decrease in day length. And so let's say the critical day length, I'll make up a figure, let's say 13 and a half hours, and that may occur in the third or fourth week of August. Well, with these warm temperatures, the insects develop faster, and if they come out before that critical day length, they come out and the interpretation, their brain goes, it's a long day, I can stay here and reproduce. Well, if they do at the end of August, then if their offspring survive later on, which most of them do not, they won't find any nectar to feed on when they emerge in October or November. So we may end up with part of the migratory population emerging too early and thus don't migrate. So if this is happening, and of course, the further you go north, the longer the day length is. So there are all these interacting factors, and it's hard to say. I mean, one of the things we're hoping, we've been monitoring the energy levels, and that's based on how much fat you've got to be able to migrate from here to Mexico and so on, looking at different parts, places along the migratory path for 3 years. And what they do is they keep a fairly constant level. Like you in the car, you know, you fill it up when you need to. You don't have jerry cans full of gas. So what happens is that so they fill up more as they get to Mexico. And what we're thinking we may, one conservation may be to ensure that people along the path plant more, but maybe we should be planting more near the overwintering sites where they can really tank up. Because once they go up into the mountains, there aren't many flowers. And they have to be there for 4 months. Well, with climate change, if the temperature just goes up 1 or 2 degrees, then they may use that energy over the 4 months, but instead of for 4 months, they may do it in three. Then they run out of gas, they die. So it's not in one place, and it's not one factor. We have to get a much better coordination of the different possibilities. And we'd like to see, for example, could we increase the number of flowers, gas stations, if you like, around the overwintering sites. But, you know, if it keeps getting warmer, that's going to be more of a challenge as well.
Can I ask you one question before you go, Professor McNeil?
Sure.
And that is, the generation of monarchs, how far does one generation travel? Like, I know there are migratory monarchs. Do they make it from Mexico to here and then back in one generation? Or does one generation go part way, and then the next generation goes part way, and then vice versa, or in reverse?
Well, there is a very, 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 you know, like 1/100th of 0.5% that actually leave Mexico and return back to, say, Toronto, where they left the year before on tagging. But most of them will fly into, say, Texas. There will be a generation. Their children will move, progeny will move further north. And then sort of the grandchildren of the ones that were in Mexico would end up here. But at any point along the trajectory, if conditions happen to be bad, even if a lot leave Mexico, we may end up with a small number arriving here. And similarly, if we have really good conditions here in the fall, many may migrate south. But again, if they encounter really bad conditions in Texas or something, many of them won't make it. So, I mean, this is the problem. It's not, if it was just here and there, it may be a lot easier to coordinate conservation than if we have to think of all of the way down and back.
Oh, yeah. All right. Well, I appreciate your time and insights, Professor McNeil. So fascinating. Just unfortunate, right? But as you said, we can plant all the flowers we want. And we can have all the milkweed we want. But if we just don't address climate change, this is going to be an effect we just can't deal with. Like, here is one of the consequences of not dealing with climate change.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Professor Jeremy McNeil, Department of Biology at Western University, thanks for your time today.
You're more than welcome, Tom. Thank you for having me on. Bye-bye.